Presentation here in our respiration symposium is going to be from Howard Skinner, USD ARS, University Park in Pennsylvania. Water temperature and defoliation effects on perennial grassland respiration. Thanks, Howard.
Great. Well, I guess when he was putting this symposium together, he sent out a call for anyone that had respiration data, and I wrote back and said, well, you know, I have this ecosystem level respiration data that I've been collecting for a number of years. I didn't know if it would be appropriate, you know, because this is a plant physiology group. There's not going to be crop physiology. Well, this is going to be, yeah, more crop ecology than crop physiology that you're going to get today. But he was kind enough to say, yes, he'd like to see what I have to offer, and so that's what we're going to talk about here for the next few minutes. And we're going to, like I say, look at perennial grasslands and particularly focusing in on defoliation and how that affects respiration rates, and how that, at the end, how that might interact a little bit with water and temperature stress. So to begin with, if we look, a lot of the work that I do, you know, he went to a lot of effort to try and, you know, from single plants get what's going on at, you know, a whole field of maize. That's too much work for me, so I just go out and measure it all directly in the field. And what I've been doing is using micrometeorological techniques to measure both net uptake and respiration over a number of years. This is one particular study that I did a few years ago on a switchgrass bioenergy crop, looking at carbon fluxes, carbon exchange over four growing seasons, starting with the initial season with the switchgrass. Let's see if I can. That's not what I wanted to do, move the mouse without moving forward. So if you look at, first of all, just the biomass over these 4 years, as you may know, switchgrass is slow to establish. That zero biomass the first year doesn't mean there was no biomass produced. There just wasn't enough to bother harvesting in that case. But you see the harvested biomass increases each year. But if you look at gross primary productivity or photosynthetic uptake, and I'm going to kind of mess with your minds here right before lunch a little bit. In micrometeorological studies, negative means fluxes into the ecosystem. So negative means uptake, positive means respiration or loss. So if you look at annual photosynthetic uptake across those 4 years, with you know, those huge differences in biomass production, annual photosynthesis hardly varies at all from year to year. And so obviously what has to change is how that biomass is being partitioned, what's being lost through respiration, how, what's being partitioned below ground versus above ground, all those kinds of things. I should point out, at this point, when we're measuring ecosystem respiration with these systems, we are measuring true ecosystem respiration. So it's a combination of plant and soil respiration that we're looking at here. And we're integrating over several hundred to thousand square meters as far as the measurements that we're taking. So no effect on photosynthesis to speak of, but if you look at ecosystem respiration, I'm not going to touch that. I'm not going to touch that mouse again. If you look at ecosystem respiration, we see very large differences across the years, whereas uptake, there's less than 100 grams of CO2 per meter squared per year difference. We're talking about nearly 900 grams difference in ecosystem respiration, which has a huge effect on the net ecosystem exchange, which is the difference between uptake and respiration rate. And there's been several studies that have shown when you're looking at the total carbon balance of an ecosystem, that it's the respiration rate that is driving differences, either among years or among different sites. And much less often, those differences are being driven by photosynthetic uptake. So in this presentation, I'm going to take a look at respiration from an ecosystem perspective, and I've used both these micrometeorological approaches, but also small chamber approaches. All this work is done in the field. One thing I'll do is look at carbon 13 signature differences between soil organic matter and plant carbon. Planting a C3 crop on a soil that has historically grown a C4 species, so you have inherent differences in the carbon 13 signatures, to separate respiration on these ecosystems into the shoot, root, and soil respiration. And like I said, I'm particularly interested in how harvesting affects respiration rates, and I want to look at differences between cut and grazed pastures, because there are reasons to think that they would be significantly different in how they respond and how the plants respond to those different harvest treatments. And then look at drought, stress, and soil temperature effects on respiration. So first, to look at partitioning the ecosystem respiration, this was done with in small plots and these chambers, and just kind of summarize what we found. If you look at the top panel is the above ground biomass, and we're looking at I think it's 1, 8, 14 and 21 days after defoliation. And you see for the first 2 weeks after these cool season grasses are defoliated, there's no increase in biomass. In fact, you could perhaps argue, although the differences were not significant, that there might be a slight decrease in above ground biomass during those first 2 weeks. And then finally, in the third week after defoliation, we get an increase we get in above ground biomass. But if you look at the same time at the ecosystem respiration, and so this is shoots, roots, and soil, that there's a fairly significant and linear increase in ecosystem respiration during those first 3 weeks, and nearly a threefold difference between the respiration rate 1 day after defoliation and then 3 weeks after defoliation. If you separate the respiration into different components in the top panel, the soil respiration, the dark circles, the open circles, root respiration, and then the triangle is shoot, you see immediately after defoliation, all three components are approximately equal and very low. They increase at about the same rate for the first week following defoliation. But at that point, both root and soil respiration stabilize at about a week after defoliation and don't change for the next 2 weeks after that, whereas we see a continual increase in shoot respiration as the crop grows, and it becomes by far the dominant component of the ecosystem respiration. The lower panel just shows the same data, but as a percentage of total ecosystem respiration. And so the shoots start at a little less than 40% right after cutting, and go to nearly 70% of total respiration is accounted for by the above ground biomass. Shoot plus root increases from about 65% to 70% of total respiration right after cutting to 85% of total ecosystem respiration by 3 weeks after cutting. And so from this we can see, or at least these data suggest, that there's a very significant effect of defoliation on on respiration rate, which is what you would expect. We've heard all day how maintenance respiration is related to the size of the plant. If you go in and you remove 80 to 90% of the above ground material, it's not surprising that you get a very large decrease in respiration rate. But that reduction in the supply of assimilates below ground also affects root respiration and respiration of the soil organisms. So if we start with that background and we want to take a look at what are the differences, in that case those were small plots, they were clipped to a desired height and then allowed to regrow. On a hoe field or pasture scale, if you mow a field, that results in a very rapid, very uniform defoliation, which you would expect to lead to an increase, rapid and large decrease in photosynthetic carbon uptake and in ecosystem respiration. However, when you go in and graze, it may take several days to remove the biomass, and it doesn't happen all within an hour or two. As you can see from the lower picture, that grazing is very patchy. There are some spots that are grazed right to the ground. There's hardly any grass left, others that are not touched at all. And so with this patchy, slow time frame for defoliation, you would expect that that might lead to a smaller decrease in photosynthetic carbon supply and also a smaller decrease in ecosystem respiration rate. And so that's what I wanted to look at using some of our eddy covariance flux data. And these data were collected over 9 years. And we had two systems, and each system was set up at the boundary between two paddocks. So there were four paddocks that we were monitoring. They could be managed separately. Some could be cut, and some could be grazed at different times during the year. And depending on which direction the wind was blowing, whichever paddock it was coming across, we would have data on the uptake and respiration rates for that particular paddock. So over those 9 years, we were able to follow 105 different harvesting events, 22 times that they were cut. They were grazed much more frequently than they were cut, so there were 83 grazing events compared to 22 cutting events. So here I just want to give you an example of the kind of data that we get from these eddy covariance measurements. We're collecting flux data every 20 minutes, and so it's 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. For this presentation, I'm going to be mostly concerned with the 7 days before a harvest event and then the 14 days after harvest. And again, down, negative, means photosynthetic uptake. Positive means respiratory loss. And so you see net uptake during the day, loss at night, and this alfalfa field was cut on day of year 170 in 2011, and I don't think I need to point out to anyone when that field was cut. I mean, you can tell pretty much to the hour when they come through and mow. You see this immediate reduction in photosynthesis. And then after a day or two, actually it starts to regrow, and we start to get a reaccumulation of photosynthetic capacity and an increase. But in this case, even after a couple of weeks, it had not returned to the same uptake rates that it had existed before the cutting. But from my previous slide, you would have expected a fairly significant reduction in respiration immediately following that harvest event. And in fact, if you look at that, respiration rates actually increased following defoliation. And there is no sign, no indication of all at all in those data that there was a negative impact on respiration rate. part of that may be because this is looking at soil temperature data, and the arrow shows when the pasture was cut, that it was considerably cooler the 7 days before cutting than it was for the 2 weeks after cutting. So some of that increase and perhaps all of the increase in respiration could be due to differences in temperature, but still it doesn't, even if you take the temperature effects out, and we've tried to do that, take out the effects of temperature and moisture, and we still don't get a decrease in ecosystem respiration following cutting. Okay, to compare that with when a pasture has been grazed, this was the same year, a different pasture a little bit earlier in the year. Again, see the photosynthetic uptake. The gray bar across the bottom going from about the days 151 to 157 shows when the pasture was grazed. And here, as we expected, you see a very gradual decrease in photosynthetic uptake as more and more biomass is removed each day that the cattle are on the field. But again, when you look at the nighttime respiration rates, there is no indication at all that we're seeing a decrease in ecosystem respiration following defoliation. And so these are just a couple of examples. If you look at all the data that we have, as and this is comparing differences in uptake, and now I'm going to make you switch again. This time negative really does mean that photosynthesis went down. And we're looking at the 7 days pre-defoliation compared with the 14-day post-defoliation and the average over those two time periods. And we need to kind of average over time periods because we do have, you know, differences in light availability over those times, which will have a big effect on photosynthesis, temperature, moisture. And so we try and kind of average out some of those things that change daily. And you can see that, yes, indeed, when you cut these pastures, there's a greater decrease in photosynthesis than there is when you graze the pastures. But if you look at respiration rate, and again, over all these, in this case, we only had about 80 harvest events where we had sufficient respiration data to do a good analysis. But still, over 80 harvest periods, there is just no indication at all that ecosystem respiration is being negatively affected by the harvest that we're doing, whether it's cutting or grazing in this case. And you can see the averages there that, yeah, the grazed mean is slightly negative, but really neither of those are different than zero. So we have to ask, you know, why are field scale respiration results so different from small plots, so different from what we would expect? I don't think I have a good answer for that. I have a couple of suggestions of some things that contribute to that, and I'd be open to any ideas that others have. First thing, when you cut a pasture for hay, you don't immediately remove all of that above ground biomass. It's cut, it's left to lay in the field to dry, and there's respiration going on. So really, at the time of cutting, we haven't really removed anything from the field. We have cut off the carbon supply, and those respiration rates are going to change as the hay dries, but it's still there and it's still contributing to ecosystem respiration. So we have some additional sources. Whether if you removed all that hay, if we would see the typical response, I don't know. I think to a lesser extent, you get the same thing happening when you graze a paddock, except you don't leave the grass lane, but the cattle redeposit the harvested material as manure on the fields, which are respiring as well. And so I think, you know, we're seeing, you know, when you're trying to evaluate an ecosystem scale, there are additional sources of respiratory loss that aren't accounted for just by what's happening with the growing plants and with the soil organisms. Okay, if we take a look at ecosystem respiration responses to soil moisture and temperature, and what I would do here is take, in this case, these are respiration data for the entire year, so there's a lot of wintertime respiration results included. And what I've done is create these different bins of different soil moisture levels, and this is soil at the soil moisture at the 5-centimeter depth. And so the blue squares look at soil moisture greater than 26%. Field capacity is roughly 30 to 35%. So it's anything from field capacity on down to this level. And you look at the response of ecosystem respiration to soil temperature. And then as we allow the soil to dry slightly, the yellow triangles are slightly drier soil than the green triangles, slightly drier still, 16 to 20%. And you really don't see any divergence with those different soil moistures from the greater than 26% soil moisture. It's not till we get down to the 11 to 15% soil moisture, so less than 50% of field capacity, that we start to see respiration rates start to kind of look like they're dipping down below that line. And those are the red circles. The only time we would get soils that dry was either very early in the year when the soil's not really dry, but some of it's frozen, and so this only measures liquid water. And so those are the red circles you see down around 0 degrees, and then out in the kind of late summer when it's hot and also dry. And so we're seeing a reduction. It's not until we get to about, I say, less than 50% of field capacity. Then when we get really, really dry, less than 10% this year, that was only when the soil was frozen and there was no liquid water. Is what we're seeing there. Okay, we go to a different field in a different year, the same bins. In this case, I didn't put the curve through the blue data, but it's a very similar result. In this case, there's just one long little red dot in the 11 to 15% soil moisture, so we really can't say anything much about what's happening there. But this particular year, there was a very long drought that developed over the course of a couple of months. We hardly got any rain at all in August, or well, in July and August, and so the soil got very dry and stayed dry for a very long time. And so those black circles where the soil moisture was less than 10%, we can see a very significant reduction in ecosystem respiration rate in those very dry soils. We also, there are a few fairly wet soil days at 21 to 25% that look like they're kind of falling below where the line should be. And those data were collected 1 to 2 days after it finally rained. And when it did rain, we got a lot of rain. The system wetted up very quickly. But it appeared like it took a couple of 3 days for respiration to recover following that long drought period. Okay, so just to compare with that, if we look at soil moisture effects on gross primary productivity, on photosynthetic uptake, And in this case, these are data that are over several years, and I've screened out all the data where I think the PAR was less than about 1,000 micromoles, and I had to screen out days that were, I think, everything that was less than 2 weeks after defoliation event. So I was trying to get just the moisture effects on photosynthetic uptake and remove the light and the and the leaf area, the defoliation, when we know that the leaf area has been removed. And again, we see very little change early on, but as the soil starts to dry, increasingly rapid decrease in photosynthetic uptake until at about 7% soil moisture, there's no uptake at all. And so the drought effects on ecosystem respiration and on photosynthetic uptake, in this case, seem to be quite similar. If you look at similar levels of drought stress, we're seeing fairly similar levels in the reduction in photosynthesis and respiration. Photosynthesis still looks like it's maybe affected a little bit more, but within of the uncertainty. And you see, when we start for showing ecosystem data, we don't get these very nice tight curves with every point falling right on the line like you can get with growth chamber and controlled environment studies. But it would be hard to say there's any difference between the two. So to kind of summarize this ecosystem level research, shoot respiration comprises about 40 to 70% of ecosystem respiration, and in these small plots, it increased about fivefold from 1 to 21 days after defoliation. I should point out, when we defoliate these small plots, you cut the grass, you go in and immediately rake it off and get rid of it. So there's none of this extra respiration going on. Both root and soil respiration were less affected by defoliation than was shoot defoliation, but they both nearly doubled during the first week of regrowth and then remained constant thereafter. The cutting and grazing effects on photosynthesis were immediately and unequivocal. Cutting had a greater effect on photosynthesis than grazing did. In these field, whole field studies, defoliation effects on ecosystem respiration were minor, and there was no obvious decrease in respiration observed. I say some of that may be to these additional sources of respiration, and I mentioned that earlier. And then respiration and photosynthesis responded fairly similar to moisture stress, with large reductions not occurring until volumetric soil moisture content was less than 50% of field capacity. That's it.
Any questions for Howard?
Yeah.
So you mean ecosystem respiration, that's shoot respiration across everything, isn't it?
It's shoots, it's roots, it's soil organisms, it's...
And including the seed rates that are the organic matter on the ground,
Yeah, it's everything that's on the ground. It's the rabbit that runs through the field. It's everything.
Soil respiration, did you separate?
Yeah. Well, so that, again, was using the carbon 13 signatures, because the roots were from C3 plants and had a carbon 13 signature of about minus 27 parts per mil. The soil was a longtime C4 soil with a signature of about minus 14 to minus 15 parts per mil. When you collect the respired CO2 and do the 13C analysis, you can partition based on the signature of the CO2 you collect. You can partition how much came from the soil and how much came from the roots. Now, roots are a little tricky because it's the roots and it is the organisms that are, you know, growing and living right on the root and are, you know, consuming.
Are there other organic matter in the soil that maybe as a
So roots would include anything that's either the root itself or living on root exudates. So it's usually, I put roots, a lot of times we refer to it more as rhizosphere respiration versus bulk soil respiration. Yeah.
Why does shoot respiration increase so dramatically in those first 21 days that you reduce enough of the mantis?
Well, I think you've got a couple of things. Is obviously early on, you don't have any more mass, so it's not going to be maintenance respiration associated with the biomass. So my assumption is that it's growth respiration associated with you know, getting those new leaves to grow again.
Okay,
yeah.
The second question is, would you expect to see soil respiration increasing in those first 21 days due to deterioration or not?
You know, that's a good question. I don't think I...
30 days or whatever it might be, 40 days.
Yeah, you know, and I don't have a good answer for that because there's a couple of things happening. When you cut off the carbon supply to the roots and to the soil, there are indications in the literature that that reduces soil respiration. But like you say, when you have roots that are starting to senesce and you get some root turnover, that might increase soil respiration. So it's not really clear in my mind exactly what to expect and what the dynamics would be if there's changes over time.
I would think that when hay is cut, there's a lot of decay, respiration that's occurring from the organisms that are in the soil. The roots are decaying. There's a lot of root shock that's going on at that point in time after hay cutting.
Yeah. Although when we did this in a small, you know, in those small plots, which is essentially a hay cutting, we, you know, we did see that lower root respiration, root and soil respiration was lower immediately after cutting than it was 7 days later. But it was a small effect. It was much smaller than above ground.
I just have a technical question. So I was struck by the fact that your Micromet data is so complete. There's no missing data. You go back.
Oh yeah, there's
the mid-90s,
there's tons of missing data.
Not like it used to be. It used to be nighttime any flock.
Okay.
Hardly ever got the turtle in the carapace.
Okay. So look at that. And since I don't dare touch the mouse, I'm going to walk over here.
Any data that looks like that, looks like that, looks like that, 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 those are all gap-filled data.
So it's still harder at night.
So it's still harder at night, which is why I have a lot fewer nighttime and fewer respiration data than I do photosynthesis.
It's still a beautiful
day. Why is it harder at night?
Because you need a lot of wind and turbulent flow and to keep the atmosphere stirred up, and the winds just get so calm at night that the data just, you know, if you saw the raw data, those nighttime fluxes, you know, would go from +2 to -2, and they just go all over the place. And so you do a lot of gap filling at night. Although I should point out, the data I used for my analysis down here, none of these were gap filled data. These were the, after you get rid of all the junk, this is the good stuff left over with this much variability still.